happier, we can learn how to be happier by setting up certain systems in place, like being grateful, like learning how to be compassionate to ourselves.
Good morning and welcome to Resonate, conversations and life lessons from Rancho La Puerta. I'm your host, Barry. This morning, I'm taking you for a walk through an area that we call the Oak Grove. For obvious reasons, I'm surrounded by these magnificent oak trees that have been around so much longer than any of us. I'm always amazed at the gifts of Mother Nature. She's like a master artist. There's a lot of evidence out these days that shows that being in nature on a daily basis is good for one's well-being. The majority of our guests here at Rancho La Puerta start their day with either a walk or a hike. We are blessed to have almost 50 miles of hiking trails here at Rancho La Puerta. And speaking of blessed, there's a lot of evidence that shows that feeling blessed and feeling gratitude is also wonderful for your health. That is why I'm so excited about today's interview with Dr. Randy Kamen. Dr. Kamen is a psychologist, an educator, and an author. Her first book, Behind the Therapy Door, became a bestseller. Earlier this year, she released a new book, The Gratitude Effect. I've already read it and I'm applying it to my personal life. Dr. Kamen has done some groundbreaking work in the area of mind-body science at both Harvard and the Boston School of Medicine. She travels internationally, teaching people about positivity and gratitude and how it can positively affect your health. I'm so excited about today's interview so I can learn more ways to bring more joy into my life. I hope you will too. Today, I'm so happy I'm talking to Dr. Randy Kamen. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Barry. Great to see you.
It's good to see you. And I'm going to call you Randy because I know you. We've had conversations in the past.
Yes,
and I love that.
Too.
So you have your best-selling book, Behind the Therapy Door, and then only released last year, The Gratitude Effect.
Yes.
Positivity Journal. So those two books. And what I'm really looking forward to about our chat is people are looking for ways to improve the quality of their lives, especially like on an internal level,
yeah,
not just superficially. And I feel like I've seen that a lot more since COVID than ever before.
Absolutely. That is
right?
True.
I don't have a copy of your first book, but I made a copy of it up there on my bookshelf so that you can see it, because of course, I wore it out by reading it so much. But I was just curious, for fun, why is it called Behind the Therapy Door?
Good question. So it really is a look at what happens inside therapy, because therapy is supposed to be so confidential and we never discuss our patients. We never discuss what's going on, really. And I just thought I would teach the strategies that I teach patients for real in my office, along with the dialogue that I have with them, that is confidential, but because I used composite people, I didn't really use actual, it was HIPAA compliant.
Right.
And the few people that I did actually tell their stories about gave me permission.
One would think maybe that it's one size fits all in that level, but it's not. There's different strategies for different people, and people are quite complex.
Yes, and that said, there are certain methods that would apply to most people. For example, being able to self-regulate and calm yourself down, that's a universal thing that we all need to learn how to do. We're wired for negativity and stress, actually, that comes with our DNA, and to offset that neurologic imbalance, we have to learn some strategies. That's the best way to really counteract some of that negativity.
I love that. And I love the new book, The Gratitude Effect, because I feel like I've been really delving the last 4 years into self-awareness. And I think every person I've studied with, every book I've read, gratitude is kind of at the center.
It is. And Barry, it is considered one of the hallmarks of mental health.
Right.
Mental health is predicated largely on being grateful. And it right. it helps with addiction. It helps with all kinds of neurological imbalances that we're trying to correct. Right. And one of them is being more grateful. And many of us in our culture really have to learn that because we're not very good at it.
Right.
Most of us have to learn how to do that, which is thankfully a teachable, learnable skill that you can develop over time with practice.
No, I have so many things I want to talk to you about today because I went through your book and I love it. But what do you think is the gratitude effect?
I think the gratitude effect is every day taking even just 2 minutes out of the day. And rather than scanning the horizon for what's wrong, which is what most of us do, like what's going to be the challenge today, but scanning the horizon, if you will, for what's good. And we don't do that. We tend as a society not to do that. We want to put out the fires and read the news first thing in the morning rather than smell right. the roses, have a nice conversation.
I know. Sadly, my background in journalism, it's like if it bleeds, it leads. And that's just kind of sad. But that brings me right to my first thing I want to talk about is the negativity bias. We're all geared with a negativity bias. Is that inherited?
Yes. So that's in our DNA. We inherited it ancestrally from our long ago relatives that fought off neighboring tribes and scary tigers and all kinds of climate catastrophes, stuff like that. So we automatically get scared, get anxious, get negative. What we need to do is offset that by building a foundation of what's good and what strengthens us and what makes us feel good internally in inside ourselves and in our relationships, so that when this negativity arises, we could calm ourselves down and draw upon the positive experiences right. and remember that it's not all bad. And things right. usually work out, not always, but when they don't work out, we can find and regulate once again. It takes some time, but we right. need some skills. We need to build skills so we get better at handling whatever challenges happen, because we're all going to just face more challenges right. as we move through the life cycle.
So we pass it down, like, through our children, through our actual genes and our DNA.
Don't you think?
That's crazy. But the nice thing is that I think science is starting to show that there are ways to redo that with like the neuroplasticity of the brain. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah.
Because that's super, super hopeful for me.
So hopeful, Barry. It's changed everything, because it used to be that we thought that brain developed and then after 20 or 20s, that was it. And right. now we know that the brain continues to develop, new networks continue to fire and grow throughout the life cycle. So what we could do is start learning various things like gratitude, self-compassion, even love, just kindness, all of these things we've discovered through research in the past 50, 60, 70 years, that we can develop these positive attributes that we thought only happened by chance. And we can continue to develop our brains in that way. So also, we only used to study depression, anxiety, borderline personality, schizophrenic. We never studied what it takes to be happy, joyful, awestruck. Right. And now we're studying that stuff, and we know that we can build more of that into our lives. I mean, we could be happier. We can right. learn how to be happier by setting up certain systems in place, like right. being grateful, like learning how to relax, like learning how to be compassionate to ourselves.
How does that actually work scientifically? I watched one of your interviews you did with a doctor, and he said neurons that fire together wire together.
Rick Hansen, yes.
Yeah, so does the actually emotions cause the neurons to change?
They can. So let's say every day you wake up and you're anxious. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever you do regularly, you strengthen. So if you're angry all the time, if you're sad all the time, if you tell this story of your childhood that was so awful all the time, what you're doing is you're reinforcing that memory or that feeling or that thought process. And in a way, that could really bite you because it's not necessarily a good thing. You want to reinforce what's good and build this foundation of goodness and draw upon that, because then when a real challenge arises, rather than the habitual negativity, right, you have the wherewithal to meet it successfully.
Right. So kind of like what you focus on expands.
What you focus on gets stronger. And I just want to throw this out, which is a little bit of a controversial idea. Mm-hmm. But as a psychologist, I get to say this, and that's that sometimes therapy can actually reinforce a trauma. So for example, if you're talking about this early childhood traumatic experience or the death of a parent that was horrible or just whatever, you know, we've all had our challenges, and you tell that story in therapy over and over again, then you decide, I'm not getting anywhere with this therapist, I'm going to go to a new therapist and talk about this over and over again, you are strengthening that trauma and making it bigger and more important. And what it's doing is it's creating more negativity and trauma in your life. And sometimes it's better not to talk about a negative situation too much unless it's in the service of healing.
That brings me to another thing I wanted to talk to you about, because I hear this term all the time, toxic positivity. What is toxic positivity, and why is that different than positivity?
So toxic positivity makes my skin crawl. Mm-hmm. And that's pretending that things are good when they're not, mm-hmm, or that, oh yeah, I feel great when I don't. Whereas positivity is really examining certain scenarios, certain situations, maybe even negative situations, and finding some good. Mm-hmm. So it's authentic, the positivity that you're experiencing, which you're, you know, with toxic positivity, you're faking it. And I'm completely against faking it, but rather finding the, you know, let's say you were abused as a kid. Mm-hmm. And that's a horrible thing. I mean, you're not going to like, oh, isn't life grand? But you could find, you know, it made me into this interesting person. It made me resourceful. It made me find decent people to connect with so those are real things that you could be positive about, right, without being phony.
Right. Can you hold something negative or sad and joy at the same time? Can that coexist?
Yes. Happiness and grief, or joy and grief, can coexist. So let's say there's a loss. You lost a friend that you loved. Mm-hmm. And we all have these losses. Nobody gets away without them. You could also be with a friend and find joy in that experience. It doesn't take away from the fact that you're grieving for somebody that you lost. So, but I will tell you what doesn't exist together, and that's you can't be anxious and relaxed at the same right time. So if you overlearn relaxation, it quiets the anxiety. There's no reason to be chronically anxious in our culture. I mean, we have lots of reasons to be chronically anxious, but we know so much about how to quiet anxiety right now that we just don't have to live with it in a chronic way.
Right. No, I agree. So I want to go back and touch on something, because I don't want to miss this part. We were talking about the neuroplasticity of the brain, and So if I spend my whole life trying to rewire my brain, make new pathways that tend to be not negative bias, but more positive, and then let's say I'm 70 and I father a child, will I pass? Is that a permanent thing that I can pass along?
You know, it's nature nurture. So I don't know if that would have changed you enough genetically. I wish I knew more about neuroplasticity from that point of view.
Yeah.
However, I can certainly tell you that as a father, passing along a positive way of interacting in the world, or that you lean more in that direction, will certainly have an impact on a kid, on everybody in your life space.
Right.
It's very contagious when you're in a good space. Don't you agree?
Well, 100% agree. I'm all about being joyful. Because I think I'm a big words person with my journalism background, and I like to distinguish between happiness and joy in my life. Joy is a way of being in myself, where happiness is based on, it's more based on circumstances.
Yes.
So I'm happy because I won the lottery, or I just saw my friend or whatever, but that kind of comes and goes. But joy is a way of being. And so I would try to really focus on joy, right?
Yeah, good distinction. Yeah.
I paint this fingernail orange because it means joy. And it reminds me on a daily basis to try to stay joyful.
Hello, my name is Mary Les Casto. And I've been coming to the ranch for the last 30 years and seeing the development of the ranch. But what brings me back? The love affair I have for the founder, Deborah Settley. She is a person that is very unique, very caring, very loving, and what an example she is to all of us. Even at 102 years old, we all want to be like her. I know she has been my mentor, a friend, and I love her dearly. But if you ever get a chance, come to the ranch and experience what I've experienced, because it has been life-changing for me.
I hope you are enjoying today's podcast as much as I am. To learn more about our wonderful presenters and exciting weeks coming up at the ranch, go to rancholaporta.com and check out our events calendar. Make sure to mention the podcast when making your reservation to take advantage of a special offer. Some restrictions may apply. Not to go on to the negative bias, but I read this, I see this, it's like the highest rate of unhappy young people in our country. And the rate of suicide is super high, and the rate of addiction is super high, and addiction is like a form of escape. So let's talk about some healthy tools, because people are trying to escape all the negativity around them. And so there's got to be some healthy ways to do that.
Well, the number one thing that leads to suicidality is loneliness. I'll give two different answers to this. The fastest way to deal with loneliness and suicide is to connect with a friend, somebody that you trust and love. I mean, it's just so important to have, you don't have to have, nobody needs to have a zillion friends. I have friends that have many friends. You don't need to have many friends. You could have a few friends, but somebody that you know that you could count on and trust when you're hurting. And if that person isn't around, you have another person. So you have a few people that you count on. Exquisitely important for lifelong happiness is to have friendships that matter. It doesn't have to be family, but it has to be heart-centered connection. The other thing is to self-regulate. The fastest way to self-regulate, and people really hate this, is to do some abdominal breathing. Nobody wants to hear breathe when they're stressed out. However, if you do it when you're not stressed out, it'll have carryover effect. I used to be this highly anxious person all the time, and I just practiced breathing just about every day of my life. And over time, without even noticing, I realized that I've become not an anxious person. I might get anxious, but I don't lead from that space anymore.
I like that you said the connection and the friendship is a heartfelt level. And like So that isn't one of my 500 Instagram followers, probably.
No, Barry.
So I think that that's one of the things that the young people, our social media world has made people more disconnected, even though you can connect to so many people.
It's fragmented. It's like an illusion of having the support and the friendship and the accountability, and it's not there.
Right.
It's only happening when it's real, when people put their phones down and look into each other's eyes and, you know, connect for real.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. They just came out with a study that the U.S. has gone down in terms of happiness. I don't know if you saw that. Mm-hmm. The only age group that hasn't gone down but's gone up are the 60-year-old people and older. Mm,
something to look forward to.
I'm of the mind that it's because we're not as familiar with and we're not as centered on devices as younger generations. I mean, some of us are certainly, but we have more connection because we don't know how to operate the stupid things. You know, I mean, that's not always the case, but it can be.
If that was true, then I'm definitely going to be really happy because I'm so so bad at those kind of things. I think I heard on one, maybe it was one of your YouTube talks, that you talked about how important it is to actually look into someone's eyes when you're speaking with them. And it's funny, when I did one of my yoga certifications that I did, one of our things that we had to do in our training was to sit and find someone you didn't know in the training, and they timed you, and for 3 minutes, you had to just stare into that person's eyes without saying anything. And it was probably one of the most powerful things I've ever done. And it's just so interesting that we don't do that anymore and how awkward and tough it is to do that.
Well, you know, like everything else, Barry, it's with practice. Yeah. I like to look in somebody's eyes. I like to know what color their eyes are. And I like to see how they, you know, it's the, what is it? The windows to the soul.
I agree. Yeah.
You learn so much by looking at a person's eyes rather than down at their waist or away, you know, it's a point of connection. And when I teach and I do these exercises, I often have people do it and they're weirded out for a few minutes. And then I do it again and again and again. And by the end, they're just so into it.
Right. One of the people that I read is Louise Hay. She's no longer on the planet, but in her form. But one of her exercises that you did every morning, she challenged you to get up, look at yourself in the mirror, look into your eyes and say that you love the person you're seeing. And it's challenging.
Yeah.
And I know that with my upbringing, and I don't know if it's, I don't want to, it's not upbringing, but just in the time that I grew up in the whatever religious background, like self-love was almost considered narcissism.
Yes. And it is absolutely not the same thing. Self-love. So if you could truly love yourself, what it means is that you have this capacity to love and to forgive and to be grateful. And then you're better at connecting. You're better at being a friend. You're better at being a parent. So if you can't love yourself, then you don't share with others at the level that you probably want to share at.
Right.
You know, loving yourself is just, you know, it's like feeding yourself so that you could feed other people.
Right.
Loving yourself no matter what, because we're all worthy of love.
Right. Something that you talk about a lot is mindfulness and the importance of mindfulness in a person's mental health, physical health. What does mindfulness mean to you?
Well, what it means to me is to be, and Jon Kabat-Zinn, of course, speaks about this endlessly and is very articulate at describing this in exquisite detail. But what I'm going to say is that it's the ability to be in the present moment, right now, in your body, in this dialogue, and you're not thinking about, oh, what am I going to do after this broadcast or what am I going to do? But it's really being able to be in your body with me at this moment. And that takes training the brain because our brains need to be tamed. They could go wild thinking about all this stuff. And mindfulness is developing this capacity to be focused in the present moment, just feeling what you feel, being with whatever you're with. And with meditation, you develop that skill. But it doesn't have to be this strict meditation where you sit for 20 minutes twice a day, every day. What I find is that if you do 2 minutes of meditation every day or almost every day, you're going to develop mindfulness. It just means being in your body, being present. And then what I notice is that if I'm online waiting for something, and in New York, certainly there are lines everywhere, and you wait, you learn to wait. And most people are, you know, fidgeting or go, you know, that's such a great time to just with your eyes opened or not, just preferably opened in New York, you know, just being mindful. Okay, I'm just going to be in this line and breathe and just be present. And I'm not going to fidget. I'm not going to look at my phone. I mean, there are little snippets. People say, I don't have the time to do that. Everybody has the time to do that. It's just a matter of priorities. Okay, so go on your phone and look at what you want to next buy or do, or, you know, rather than just focusing on, okay, right now, the most precious thing I could do besides connecting with another human being is to be inside my body. And, you know, I'm at Rancho and I'm waiting online for my food. I could be, you know, either connecting with somebody. These are both good uses of precious time, or I'm just going to be. I'm going to be in this line. I'm not going to be moving somebody aside to get at the salad bar or whatever I'm doing. I'm just going to be. And learning how to just be is so powerful. And then once you have that, you could be present in so many other scenarios because it generalizes to everything else, the comfortable and uncomfortable.
So that is, I think that's a great tool. Anyone could do it, and they could do it anywhere at any time. Now, your new book, it's a journal, it's a positivity journal. So
yeah.
Tell me, what is the benefit of for someone to journal?
So there's research that, you know, it's really good to be grateful and to think about what you're grateful for and to express it. Expressing it is very powerful, but writing it down involves another part of the brain and gets it even more firmly established in the brain. There's just great research that when you write stuff down, the brain retains it in yet another way. That's very powerful. And there have been studies where 2 weeks of writing in a journal is equivalent to 6 months of just thinking about being grateful.
Wow. So it's that physical act of putting it on paper.
Yeah. Yeah. The physical thing is very different than just thinking it. However, that said, if you can't write it down or you don't want to write it down, it's better to use all the multitude of ways of being grateful with others, with yourself. So for example, saying thank you lots. I think we don't do that enough, especially with service people. Saying some kind of grace, if you will, before a meal, rather than just, here's my pile of food and I'm just going to scarf it down. It's, you know, take a minute to just look at the bounty and the beauty in front of you and maybe just say, nobody has to know you're doing this if it feels self-conscious. You could just say, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And be present with that. Be mindful with that. Another way is, and the writing comes into play with this, is to write a thank you note to somebody, whether they're dead or alive. Mm-hmm. And if they're alive, give it to them. You know, I feel like writing a thank you note to Deborah, because I feel like Deborah is just such an amazing human being, and just handing it to her in no fanfare, just saying thank you for being such leadership and such an iconic mentor. So, you know, there are so many ways. And what happens is, as soon as we do something like that, we're reinforcing the gratitude and elevating our joy factor. You want to do joy? Do something like that every day.
Yeah. And then, I mean, it's a win-win.
It's a win-win, because then the other person thinks you're the greatest, because thank you. Thank you.
But it also makes you feel amazing. I mean,
exactly.
You feel amazing. It builds you up. It gets a couple more of those little
networks,
synapses working together.
It
right?
really does. So the fastest way to joy or to happiness, and the Dalai Lama speaks about this, but it's been researched, is to do something nice for somebody else, whether you know them or not. Help an old lady across the street, or give a homeless person, you know, a sandwich. You know, just being kind, being kind.
This is a perfect wrap up, because you spending this time with me has been kind to me. And I really appreciate you taking your time out of your day to talk to us about this. And
of course,
I look forward to your next visit to the ranch, and we will
me
be teaching
too.
Workshops here. When will that be?
I'm there in August.
August. So wonderful.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's come to the ranch and see Randy. And I'll see you guys on the next podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Barry. It's always great hanging out with you.
I love talking to you. I love talking about positivity and gratitude. And I love knowing that there's science now that supports that we can change our brain chemistry with our thoughts. Whatever we focus on tends to expand. So why not focus on the good? And as Randy points out, there's always something good that we can focus on. Another thing that I'm taking away and gonna add to my practice from today's podcast is my gratitude list. I do have a running gratitude list. Every morning I wake up and I say, this is what I'm grateful for today. At the end of the day, I'm like, this is what happened that I'm very grateful for during the day today. The missing link for me is that I don't always write it down. Randy pointed out that the action, the physical action of writing something down, helps to internalize it into you. So I'm going to definitely try to internalize more of my gratitude into my subconscious, I hope. I hope that you're inspired to find silver linings in your life and in situations. And hey, let's make some new pathways in our brains that are positive. Until next time, this is Barry, wishing you health and daily joy.